Well, depending on what state you live in, your ballot could look like anything. It could be a paper ballot, could be a punch-through ballot, it could just be an electronic voting machine. But one way or another, many voters are going to be having to deal with voting systems this morning.
Ooh, one of those electronic voting dealies.
One vote for McCain. Thank you.
No, I want to vote for Obama.
Two votes for McCain.
Come on, it's time for a change.
Three votes for McCain.
No, no, no!
Well, it was the 2000 election that made people really start taking a hard look at the way that we vote. And to joining us this morning to discuss what kind of changes have happened over the past 10 years, we have Jessica Friedman-Hewitt. She's the former managing director of AIGA's Design for Democracy. It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that focuses on increasing civic participation through good design. And she's currently an advisor to the group. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning, Celeste.
Okay, so let's go back in time 10 years, one decade since the debacle in Florida and the hanging Chad. Mm-hmm. Have we made huge strides since then in improving our voting systems?
Well, just looking at that particular ballot in Palm Beach, a few key changes.
The butterfly ballot.
That butterfly ballot, a few key changes have occurred relative to that ballot. So first of all, the punch card voting system that set the conditions for both the hanging Chads and the butterfly ballot, which in essence was a ballot in which candidates could appear on both sides of the voting mechanism, leading mm-hmm. to some confusion about who you were punching the hole for. Neither the hanging chads nor the butterfly ballot are possible in today's climate because the punch card voting machines are essentially gone at this point. We're now on mostly optical scan machines and electronic touch screens. So those are gone. And another change that has occurred since 2000 in response to that election is we now have national election design guidelines. I know this because Design for Democracy partnered with the U.S. Election Assistance Commission to produce those. So those changes have occurred. Now, the question is, have those changes solved the problem? Are we in a,
right.
are we in a different place? You know, the election historians and technologists can really comment more robustly on the equipment side, but I would say generally they would talk about the recent changes as sort of a status quo situation of election technology always has and always will evolve, and it will always be fallible in old ways, in new ways, as those changes occur. And of course, you know, as the recent systems, as they become more, as they have more time under their belts, they will improve, but then, you know, they will become obsolete and new systems will come in on their heels.
Okay, but let's talk about these national guidelines for ballot design, because there are a lot of state laws and local laws that affect what appears or does not appear on a ballot. Some states even allow you to put a catchphrase on your underneath your name on a ballot. I mean, how does the national election design guidelines work and function with state guidelines?
That's exactly right. The guidelines are somewhat impaired still in their ability to function by the fact that
they are impaired in their ability to function. Jessica, that is a scary thing when you're talking about a ballot.
and this is the reason. I mean, you know, to follow our guidelines would essentially be in violation of state law.
Follow the national guidelines would be to violate state law.
That's right. Our guidelines are illegal in several states. For example, when we first worked with Chicago, it said in the election code, all candidates must be written in capital letters. All capital letters. Now, our guidelines specifically recommend using mixed case for all text because that is the standard in legibility. So, I mean, that's just, you know, that's a small example, but, you know, each state has its own sort of election code that does or does not promote the best possible design.
What makes it so difficult? I mean, why can't people even agree on legibility? Is it because it's such a bureaucratic process to get a ballot approved? It's both at the state level that they can't, you know, comply with national guidelines. Why don't we have a national ballot?
Why don't we have a national ballot? That's a complicated question. I think that states' rights groups would be concerned if we had a national ballot and
design.
Constitutionally,
design.
This resides with the states, though, these
exactly.
kinds of rules,
that's,
rulemaking.
That's
so
exactly
that's why it's
right.
chaotic.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So each state generates, and often the balance of power lies more with the counties than even at the state level. So really there are tens of thousands of ballot permutations when you look at when you look at the country as a whole.
All right. So what is out there right now that is a potential problem? What kind of ballots are there that are going to be our next Florida, our next hanging Chad?
You know, I mean, that's really hard to predict because, again, there are tens of thousands of ballots out there, different styles.
But what kind of things do you see that are potential problems?
Yeah, I mean, the ballot I'm most familiar with here in New York certainly has some problems in terms of legibility. There's a contradiction on the instructions say that the oval is in the top and next to the candidate. In fact, the oval is below the candidate name. So, I mean, that's a potential source of confusion. Luckily, in that case, the text is so small, people probably won't read it. So
the text telling you where the oval is.
Exactly.
No, and in high turnout situations where the time per voter comes down, errors accrue. So you're more likely to have those kinds of errors.
When they're rushing through, you mean?
Right.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, so the electronic voting machines that were supposed to fix all these problems, are people then getting a copy of their paper ballot that allows them to check it? Or does that vary widely?
You know what?
Also,
that varies very widely. There, in some cases, people use an electronic machine to create a paper ballot that they then print out and scan. In other cases, we fill out a paper ballot that we then scan and have the opportunity to make adjustments after we sort of the results are tallied on the interface. It's very varied by state to state because not only does each state have its own laws, each state chooses its own election equipment.
Okay, so if we can't get voters the advice to read the instructions, since clearly you've already said that at least one set of instructions will confuse them, what's the best advice we can give to people? Just take your time?
That's right. People should take their time, not feel rushed. They should try and orient themselves to all their voting options.
Okay, Jessica Friedman. Friedman Hewitt is the former managing director of AIGA's Design for Democracy. It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. And you're getting ready to go vote today.
That's right.
Okay, don't fill in the oval at the top because it's underneath. I heard that somewhere.
I appreciate that tip. Thank you.
She's from the AIGA. It's American Institute of Graphic Arts. So
yeah.
They know their ovals from their ellipses, from their squares, from their triangles. It's election day. We want you to report for us. Check in with us after you vote. Just check text DECIDE to 69866, no ovals there. 69866, tell us how it went, what you saw, how you felt after voting.
And you can also capture your polling place, upload a photo or even some audio to thetakeaway.org. Just send your photos through our Takeaway iPhone app if you have one of those.
Tune into thetakeaway.org tonight. Todd Zwillick is going to analyze the races on a live video stream, and it's fully interactive. You can question his punditry or push back to Todd Zwillick at thetakeaway.org. That's tonight.
I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. On Election Day, this is The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.